hari sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishavahai om shanti 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 om jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shrivasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare
Thus the course of evolution takes place in 24 stages. It starts from the root cause prakriti and ends with the earth element, the grossest manifestation. This process is broken down into two major categories: the development of prakriti as buddhi, ahankar, and the 11 senses, and the evolution of the 5 subtle elements and 5 gross elements. Okay. Internal. Wait, no, okay. Oh, Trimegna. Prakriti as buddhi, ahankar, and the 11 senses. Oh, 11 senses means it's including the mind. Okay, so that's all the. That comes down and then through the sattvic. So that's how they're counting that. And then the evolution of the 5 subtle elements and the 5 gross elements, which they'll be counting as the tamasic aspect. And then rajas is just the element that just makes them both move, makes them both work. The first category is divided again into two parts: the internal senses, antakarana, and the external senses, bahyakarana, which are 5 cognitive and 5 active senses, respectively. The second category is also divided into two main parts: non-specific qualities, avesha, and specific qualities, vesha, visesha, or avisesha and visesha. Okay. External senses. Okay. The 5 tanmatras are subtle elements to be non-specific because they cannot be perceived and enjoyed by ordinary beings. But the 5 gross elements are said to be specific because they possess specific characteristics of being pleasurable, painful, and stupefying. Oh, there's another way of putting forward those things. Stupefying. Okay. That was a real stupefying experience. These specific manifestations can be categorized into 2 major parts: the external gross elements and the 3 bodies, physical, subtle, and causal. So here you're getting in the first category is everything that's coming down connected to the goodness. So the intelligence, the false ego, and the mind, those are the internal. And then the external, the grosser, then are the senses, the jnana indriyas and the karma indriyas. Then when you're dealing with the those manifestations of tamas, then you have the tanmatras, which aren't specifically perceivable, but is what is the basis of the sense interacting with the sense object. Right? It's based on the eyes and form are based on seeing. Right? The seeing itself is not what's there, it's what is seen that is the point.
It's like a concept.
It's a concept, yeah. It's what's going on. But in the subtler aspects, because they won't get into the subtleties in the position that we'll use. So the difficulties, I mean, the point that comes up would be is that if you're working with it, see, technically when you're dealing with rasa, then rasa you have the subject and the object. So according to the interest of the subject then responds. So that means there's Krishna, right?
or then you have the point is that somebody, let's say, is having a particular experience, a particular emotion, that will draw that emotion from others. Right? Someone is crying, so that means, you know, compassion or kindness will come from the other person. So the person crying is the object, right? And then there's the subject. So the subject then relates to the object. Right? It's like Krishna will relate to the devotee. So that relating, that's the subtle, it's the verb, it's the action. So it's not actually that state can be appreciated if you're focusing on the relationship between the subject and object. If you relate on that, then you're not seeing the subject and object, so how is it working? It becomes non-specific. If I focus on seeing, then it's not specific to the eyes and the object. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm focused on it, how will I experience it? So it has to be that the focus is on those other two, so it's not on the experiential plane. But same time, it's the subtlety, like we were saying, like when you're sleeping, you know, or something's, the kirtan's going on, but you have to focus on the kirtan. As soon as you want to say, wow, this is a nice kirtan, are you focused on the kirtan? No. Are you taking part in the kirtan? No. So then it becomes past. So it's not present. It's not in the mode of goodness. You know what I'm saying? You're not in the present when you do that. So that is your aparoksha. Aparoksha experience means it's gained but through the experience itself. It can't be perceived. As soon as you perceive it, you're not involved in it anymore. Just like sleeping. You can't perceive that you're sleeping. As soon as you do, you're not sleeping. But after the fact, you can look back and go, that was nice. So it's only appreciated there. Right? So that doesn't come out at this point because rasa is not, you know, one of their topics. Right? They deal with the male and female principle, but they're dealing on the Brahman platform. So they only see the energies interacting. They're not actually seeing, because that is just what goes on. You know what I'm saying? This is the fact. This does this, this interacts like this, blah. But the actual experience that's gained, that is not their field, because they're trying to get to the stage of, impersonal realization. So rasa is not an important thing to them. So rasa will be taken as something that's connected with this world, though it's not come out so specific, right? It's not so, you can say, so developed. Right? Physical, subtle, and then causal. Okay. So then you get the physical things that you can see. Right? The senses and all that. And then the sense and the objects that everything's made out of. Then you'll have the subtle, which will be the mind specifically. And then the causal, it's not specifically clear what is the causal here. But that would have to go back, because that would have to go back into the buddhi or the ahankar or something there. But ultimately, that cause will be what you want from it, what you value in it. But actually, that cause is Krishna. But because you want it, you identify with it, you become the cause. So therefore, you get the reaction. But if you understand is the cause is Krishna, and you work to please Krishna, there is no reaction. Right? That makes sense. Shankya philosophy accepts only three independent sources. Oh, the fun part is just there in the last discussion. As we come down, now when you have the sense and the sense object, right? Now, how are we going to establish the masculine and feminine principle? What is our natural inclination? What's the masculine? What's the feminine? Yeah, which is passive, which is active. You understand? We'll take it that our senses are the masculine principle, and the sense object is the feminine principle. So we're enjoying the sense object, right? That's how we would look at it. Because we're in that mood, but actually the mechanics of it is just the opposite. You know what I'm saying? Because the tongue wants to taste. That means it's the ashray. It draws from the rasgula the sense of taste. Because the rasgula also has form, it has smell, it has touch. It has all these different aspects. Even that sound, you drop it, it'll make a splop sound. Right? So all five of the sense, all the five of the tanmatras are present within it. Right? But the tongue will only draw that from it. So actually the Rasgula is the enjoyer.
He's wanting control.
Yeah. That's why you never get satisfied by this process. Because you think you're the controller, but you're not. So, doesn't matter what you do, you're left, you're still in the feminine position. Even though we try like anything to be God, it just never works out. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have the kids, okay? You have the kids, you think I'm the enjoyer of my children. But when they're hungry, you feed them. When they cry, you hold them and that. When they're tired, you put them to sleep. You understand? So that's the thing, is that that's the trick. And we're in such illusion that we can't see it. You know?
When you talk about the Ashra and the Vishra, they switch. Is that part of it?
No, it's that our perception is switched. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the difficulty, is these things. You know, and so we think we're enjoying, but the thing is the, but in it, this is where you get something out of it. The Ashray gets more of that than the Vishay. So we think we're the enjoyer, but we're getting more out of it than the Rasgula. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's how we think we're the enjoyer. But it's just like the internal potency gets more from the interaction than Krishna does. Though Krishna is the controller, you know, like that. Does that make sense? That's the problem, is everything here, it's dead matter, we're interacting with dead matter. So that's why there's a problem. So that's the illusion, is we think that it's the dead matter that's giving us things. But actually what it is that we see the dead matter, and it's Krishna within that. That is actually, how you say, the one who's dealing. So, you know, in this it sounds very strange as the Rasgula, but that's what we see. But it's Krishna as the principle of sweetness, that therefore there's the manifestation of the Rasgula. Right? So that means it's actually him, he is the enjoyer. So that's why then if, and then the form of it, of the sweetness is a Rasgula, that's Lakshmi. Right? So now if we serve Lakshmi in attaining this principle of sweetness, in other words, we appreciate Krishna through that sweetness, then we actually make spiritual advancement. But if we don't, we think, I am the enjoyer of this, then you think, I mean, if you're the enjoyer, then that form that you're enjoying is Lakshmi. And so therefore, so for Krishna is Lakshmi, but for us, she'll become Mahamaya. Right? If we're serving, she's Lakshmi or Yogamaya. If we're trying to enjoy, she becomes Mahamaya. So that's where the illusion comes, because then you don't see Krishna in it. Yes?
To appreciate Krishna as sweetness, does that mean anything more than just, you know, remembering,
it depends on your level of understanding. So on the Brahman level, then you're looking at just the sweetness and appreciating that and that whole interaction between Krishna and the Rasgula in your tongue. Right? But if you understand that, you know, I mean, in this case, that, you know, but then that reminds you of Krishna, the person, then you remember him. You understand? Mechanics of the world is Brahman. The world is Brahman, its mechanics are Brahman. So Brahman realization means you understand those mechanics actually in relationship with Brahman. You're not in illusion about what is the mechanics of the world. Right? Then when you understand more than that, how it's your desire, your karma, all these different things, and the Lord in the heart is carrying that out, then that's Paramatma understanding. And when you understand that that whole thing, that the whole material creation is there because of the Supreme Lord, you know, that he is doing all this for us, that's Bhagavan understanding.
Okay. But you said that depends on your level of understanding.
Yes.
Does that, I think I heard you say once that in the Vedic, there's understanding, you know, okay, you understand theoretically, but then there's realization. So when you say that you have to be at a certain level, is it just understanding, or is it you have to have the realization? Or
both of them. I mean, understanding is one thing. Just to understand it is one step, but to start to, through practice, that's the way you think and everything, and that would be realization. You contemplate something, you understand it. Much of the time we call that realization, that's understanding. Realization is when that is your natural habit. Realization means that's what you will do. Because otherwise you can understand something, but if you don't do it, that's not realization, that's understanding. Right? Or the realization is so small that it's not enough to keep it going. Does that make sense?
Like that. Yes.
Is that okay? More?
Realization must be like different levels of vijnana.
Yeah. But basically it's when there's an understanding of it, a clear understanding, that is knowledge. When you value that and therefore you will act according to that, that's realization.
Uh-huh.
You understand?
Yeah.
Because realization means you're fixed there. Otherwise, what's the difference? It's just a little bit more understand. How do you tell the difference? One's academic and one is actually practice. One is, you know, conviction, you know, of practice. The other, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. This is part of self-realization, so I do it. Realization means I do this because I understand how it works, or I want to do this. Like that. Does that make sense? But it's based on knowledge. So it's not like somebody, you know, the kid likes to eat, so that's realization. No, that's still ignorance. But then he understands the principle of eating and all that. And then on top of that, then through practice, then he likes to eat. So then you can say, someone who they have something that they'll eat, something they won't eat, you know, through understanding and this and that. They've seen that this works, that something doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? You know, if they eat in a particular way, that works, or if they eat in a particular way, it doesn't work. So that's realization. Otherwise, understanding, we hear that all the time, things you should do. You know, it's like we understand that anger is bad, anger after frustration is bad, or we understand that jealousy is bad or envy is bad. That's understanding, but until we do it, that only that's and become situated, that's realization. So realization is being situated there after understanding and applying it in practice. So along the way, all it's step by step, there'll be something gained at each step. So you hear, so that's the beginning, that contemplated, then you understand it more. So by practicing it, this understanding deepens, and the practice then becomes more and more part of one's activities. So when then one is committed to doing those activities because he understands their purpose and he has that, then that would be your realization. Is that okay?
We can understand so many things, but we get forced by other things to not respond to it.
Not respond, or we don't do, or yeah, because our distraction to other things. So we don't, you know. Yeah, we know we're supposed to chant our 16 rounds of full attention. We know that, but it's not necessarily we do it. You know, so then it's by practicing doing that, then you get a little bit, you know, a few mantras or a few rounds, and you know, then we see the difference. We see how much better it is and how much nicer it is. So then after that, then we we take it more seriously. So we practice more. So when we chant always with attention, that's realization. Right. So it's mature practice rather than just, you know, just. Yeah. Yes.
What should be the balance between studying and service, like active service?
And the point is if you study something, what are you going to do with it?
Well,
you have to apply it.
Yeah.
Because if you, it's just like this. I could explain to you a recipe, and you could understand the recipe. But that doesn't in any way, shape, or form means you can cook it. That requires practice. So if you want to memorize 100 recipes and be satisfied that now you're a great cook, you can do that. But until you take those recipes and you actually practice the cooking, where you actually, at the end of your, interaction with the pots and pans and that, you actually come up with the preparation described by the recipe, then you're not cooking. You know what I'm saying? You don't actually know them. You don't know those recipes.
Does it also mean if you do one activity and you just apply it to that one, then from there you can understand how it works in everything, all your activities?
If it's not that just you applied it to the one and then stopped there, then that's all the farther it'll go. It's by applying there and then applying it into the other things. Everything, it means something happens because of work. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So nothing happens by no work. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You have to work to get any result. So if you worked and gotten one result, how do you get the next one? You worked this week and you got your payment. So that means then you'll get next week's payment also. And the week after that, and the week after that. How will you get it?
No, I meant if you do one work continuously, then that is enough to actually end up that you can apply this to all the other situations in life.
If you apply it. If you don't apply it, then how will it work? You go to work and you notice that if you focus and, you know, do what you're supposed to do, something gets done. Okay? Then you go home. Can you apply that same principle to mowing your lawn? Can you?
I have to try.
But what is it actually in principle possible?
Yeah.
But what do you have to do to actually make it work?
Have it.
You have to mow the lawn. Yes, so that's the point. It's not that you'll do one thing like that and then sit back and then you know everything. No, you have to then apply that to this next thing. But because you've applied it there, you've seen the working principle, it should be easier to apply it to something else. And the more you go, the more it'll be easier, because you start to see that this everything works by the same formulas, the same patterns. The basic principle is work. No work, you know, no... What is it? Huh? No worky, no pay.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah. Work on that one also. Thinking if it hurts, then... Yeah. No, I'm just joking. Okay. Okay, so we see from there how we got in the major things that the mode of passion, even though those qualities of the senses may come from passion, but in this practical how they're applying it, that's not actually the principle that's necessary. They just know that passion is the active principle that makes everything, goodness and ignorance, actually function. Right? So, therefore, the senses are controlled by the mind. The mind then is under the false ego, which is coming from the intelligence, which comes from the consciousness of the living entity. So that we see that works. And then, what we interact with is going to be the senses and the sense objects, right, and the tanmatras. So therefore, also in here is what is not necessarily noticed is you have the subject and object, right? You're going to have the element of the one and the element of the other. What is the seeable and what is then going to do the seeing, right? So those two, they have to interact, because otherwise one's goodness, one's ignorance. How do they match? Through passion. Right? You know, so that's the... Okay. Shankya philosophy accepts only three independent sources of valid knowledge. Perception, inference, and testimony. So that's the same like we will... Vaisheshika, he also would only accept these three, but Gotama... He would accept a fourth one. I can't even remember what it is because we don't accept it. So it's just I don't remember it. This is inference, comparison, testimony, comparison, yeah. One perceives the similarity between the description of an unfamiliar object and its actual appearance before one's senses. For example, suppose that a trustworthy person has told you that there is such a thing as a crab apple that looks like a regular red apple but is smaller and has a longer stem. One day in the woods you come upon a tree bearing fruit that you've never seen before but reminds you of apples. You then remember your friend's description of crab apples, and you come to the conclusion that this must be a crab apple tree. You know, it might work, it might not work, so we don't generally use this as a source of knowledge. So Shankya doesn't accept it either as a source of valid knowledge like that. Perception, inference, and testimony. Included within these three are other sources of knowledge such as comparison, postulation, and non-cognition, which are therefore not recognized as separate sources of knowledge. According to Shankya, there are three factors present in all valid knowledge: pramata, the subject; prameya, the object; and pramana, the medium. So you have the subject, the object, and the medium. Okay, so that works out. So you're dealing here with the relationship aspect, is that you have, yeah, okay, subject, what you're talking about, object, what it will be connecting to, and the medium, what makes the connection, like that. You know, it's like just like before, you had goodness, ignorance, and then what connects them. So pramata is a conscious principle, this is the subject, that receives and recognizes knowledge, right? So the pramata here being established as conscious principle, then that would establish the soul in that position. It is none other than the self, pure consciousness, right? Because the living entity is dying to be the subject, right? You know, that's what they want to be. Krishna is the subject, but they want to be the subjects. Prameya is the object of knowledge that is presented to the self. Pramana is the modification of the intellect through which the self comes to know an object. Thus it is the source of the medium of, or the medium of knowledge. Valid knowledge is therefore the reflection of the self in the intellect, which is modified in the form of an object. Right. Okay, so in other words, the soul is conscious and it becomes through the intellect aware of an object. The knowledge is the medium through which there'll be the interaction. Right? This is, Upanishads also then explain this. You have the upper and lower principle. Right? So and then the medium is what will connect them. So in this case, that source of valid knowledge, that medium, then is of three kinds. Right? You can come in, means that the self can come in contact with objects of knowledge through direct perception, inference, or from authority. Does that make sense? Like that. So they very nicely described here about the praman, prameya, and the pramata. So here is the praman is the medium, how you're going to know. So the shastra is how we're going to know. Right? So that is the main thing. Then, based on that, then you can, inference and pratyaksha will come into play. So for us, that's how we'll establish praman. But for, let's say, nyaya, then the perception is actually the main. That's what you're trying to get to. But they'll use anuman as the means to get to it. Like that. Because you can see two objects, but you can't see the third. So by logic, you can establish the third and make the connection between the third and the first. That's what you're trying to do. But pratyaksha is what they count as the main thing of knowledge. Because if you're using logic, you have to go by things that are seen, you can see in this way. But for us, because authority is the main, then you're trying to bring authority down to the principle of pratyaksha, you can see it. And if you can't see it, then you won't realize it. Right? So that's why you have to work. You get knowledge, But until it comes to the point of pratyaksha, you won't realize it. So you gain so much knowledge, but you can only get to there by working, by application. Does that make sense?
How does authority being coming down fit into that last statement you just made?
Because what you're seeing has to be based on what the authority has said. See, to see something, Nyaya is starting off with seeing something. And then from there, working out through Anuman, and then coming to their conclusion. Though authority is there, but their main point is working it out by what they can see. Which is not a problem if it's based on authority. But if you just make it up, then it's not so useful. It has to be based on authority. Because otherwise, then, how do you know what is the application? How do you know actually how to proceed in dealing with something that can be perceived? Because it could be seen in unlimited ways. Right? So what is the actual proper way to see it? That you have to get from authority. Right? So all three are valid, but the point is where do you paint, where is the major point? That's the difference. So the Shabda has to be your main authority. Right? So here it's just saying is that you come to know of that object through knowledge. So then if it's pratyaksha, that means it's by speculation. It's just the senses and how you perceive it. Or if it's anuman, then you'll speculate about it. But if it's shabda, it's authority, so then it's established how you're going to see it. You understand? So you can come up with different, like modern scientists, they go by pratyaksha. They see it, and unless they see it, they don't believe it. Right? Does that make sense? So that means if you shoot them in the back of the head and they didn't see it, they won't believe it that they're dead. Right? Because they didn't see it. No? Like that. Okay. Shankya Khan.
How does the light come?
How does a lifelong celibate get the realization?
Because it contradicts seemingly.
Why would it contradict? You seem to be one of these karma mimamsis that are bringing up the point against Shankaracharya here. It's the same point was brought up to him.
No, because it seems that the Brahmachari, he learns by hearing and by seeing. So,
yes.
But then, where's the activity to get the realization? I mean, it seems that that is enough to get the realization from that.
But are you applying that? You still have to apply it in your own life as a brahmachari.
So then you get.
You know what I'm saying? Do you have a problem with applying something? You would rather sit back in your room behind your desk with your little table light and look at books all day and that's it?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so therefore this question keeps coming up. But the point is that unless there's practical service on some level in some way, how will that knowledge be applied? You understand? Student life is for the purpose of doing service. What is the definition? It means brahmachari. One of the definitions is student. What's another definition? Yeah, which kind of servant? Menial servant. So what does menial service mean? Sit back and go, okay, yeah, clean over there. Yeah, a little bit over there, pick that up. What does menial service mean? He does the work himself. So that's how the brahmacharis get the realization. That's why the modern university doesn't give realization. Right? You understand? Because the only activity that goes on is, you know, in the co-ed dorms. So that doesn't give a lot of realization. You understand? So there's no service. There's no respect of authority. Does that make sense? That's the problem. Because in, see, the same thing contradicts the previous argument that if I know it in one area, can I apply it to the others? Because by doing that, then I don't have to do all those other things, I only have to do the one. But then if it's there, then saying that, well, the brahmachari, unless he does it, he won't get the knowledge. You know what I'm saying? You've contradicted yourself there. So you have to take one platform. You know, you have to get your, your sit in the room vibe, you have to get down and make it consistent. Otherwise, people will find holes in your theory. You understand? Like that. Unless, of course, you want to get married, of course, then that's another thing. Then, yes, then that will prove that. But if that wasn't your point. You know what I'm saying? The Shankya concept of perception, pratyaksha, as a source of valid knowledge is different from those poised or posited by other systems of Vedic knowledge, Vedic philosophy. In Shankya, valid knowledge means a definite and unerring cognition that is illuminated or made known by the self through its reflected light in buddhi. Okay? Means the soul itself through its reflected light from the intelligence, that's that first principle that's coming from the Mahat. Through that, then he understands everything. The mind, intellect, and senses are unconscious material entities, and therefore cannot perceive or experience any object. For perception or experience, consciousness is needed. And consciousness belongs only to the self, but the self cannot directly apprehend the objects of the world because the self is nishkriya, meaning motionless or without action. And without motion or activity, apprehension is not possible. So it says only this means the mind, intelligence, and ego are dead matter. So how are they going to perceive anything? So only the soul who is conscious can see. Right? But the soul is inactive. So this is now the point that, you know, this is the dilemma that has to be explained. If consciousness alone could apprehend the objects of the world, then, because the self is infinite and ever-present, one would know all the objects of the world, but this is not the case. Right? One would just be self-illuminated. But, you know, only Krishna is like that. The self knows objects only through the mind, intellect, and senses. True knowledge of an external object is attained when the impression of the object is perceived through the senses and recorded, reworded in the intellect, which then reflects the light of consciousness onto the objects. Perception is the direct cognition of an object through the contact of the senses. Right. So, means one is seeing these things, the intellect then will have its perception on that, then that becomes reflected. That then, what that's doing, then the soul is conscious, it will reflect that, and then the soul is perceiving it. You know, just like before, the consciousness of the living entity, that is reflected onto the ego, or onto the mind, onto the intellect, onto the buddhi, and then the living entity thinks, I am that. Because he sees his own reflection. So he, in other words, the senses perceive it, you know, then it's all run through everything, the intellect and all that, then that acts as a mirror, which then the living entity, his intellect, has the, you know, light that illuminates that then you can see that reflection. You understand? That's how they're working this pratyaksha, the mechanics of how pratyaksha is working. Like that. Does that make sense? Because only because the soul thinks I am that, therefore then you relate to it in that way. Yes.
Why does the soul identify with that? Why does he see that and say, oh, the idea of the reflection.
Now when you look in the mirror, what do you say?
That's me.
Right. Then?
But why does the soul think that it is that?
Because it wants to think it's that. Because the other alternative is I'm not that, I'm servant of Krishna, and I'm in no way, shape, or form going to become God, you know, today, yesterday, or tomorrow. And so I might as well surrender. That's the alternative. You understand? And so unfortunately that's not the popular platform in this world. Right? As evidenced by how many living entities are here. Does that make sense? Like that. It's because they want to. Like that. They're intrigued by the material energy. So it's Maya creates that illusion. That's what they don't bring in here. Because the material energy is unconscious. So it only becomes conscious in contact with the jiva. Right? Here they're not making any real distinction in self and all that. So there's overlaps of what's there. So that ability, what you perceive in the object, that they're saying is your own consciousness is actually the Supreme Lord. So what we're perceiving is actually the Supreme Lord in the thing. But we don't realize that, so we think it's the dead matter. That's the problem with pratyaksha. If you only see it with pratyaksha, you only see dead matter. So unless it's based on shabda, then you can't see that actually it's more than that. So when you look at something, you see something, there's beyond that. Right? But you can see that. That's the meaning. The shabda can become pratyaksha. But that pratyaksha is of higher quality. Right? There's no illusion. That makes sense. Perception is the direct cognition of an object through the contact of the senses. When an object such as hair comes within the range of vision, there is contact with... Oh, there's hair and here is chair. So does that mean it's a very fuzzy chair or something? You know, so it's a hairy chair. When there is contact between the chair and the eyes... Okay. There's contact between the chair and the eyes. Okay, the impression of the chair is produced in the eyes, and that impression is then analyzed and synthesized by the mind. Through the activity of the mind, the intellect then becomes modified and transformed into the form of a chair. The predominance of sattva in the intellect enables it to reflect the modification of the chair in the self, right? Because it's close to the soul. It is then reflected back to the intellect. Thus, the unconscious intellect, which is modified by the object chair, becomes illuminated into a conscious state in which perception is possible, just as a mirror reflects the light of a lamp and thereby illuminates other objects. So the intellect, an unconscious principle, reflects the consciousness of the self and recognizes objects. That means if you put a mirror next to a lamp, that mirror can actually illuminate other things because it's come in contact. So that they're saying is that the intelligence, the senses perceive it, the mind digests it and comes up with it, something like this. Then the intellect transforms so that it's reflecting the nature, I mean, has that nature of the chair, because you have to identify that's a chair. So it means it has to be thinking in that way. Right? That, because it's based in sattva, it has the ability, because it's close to the soul, to reflect the consciousness of the soul. Then from that, you actually are able to properly perceive. Right? That's what they're giving here as the process. So, you know, quite a convoluted process. Because they're having to explain how the things work without bringing into the picture the super soul. You know, like that. That's the difficulty. Because it's the super soul that's entering everything. He is that light. He is that consciousness that they're talking about. They're thinking it's coming from the soul itself, but it's not. It's coming from the super soul. but they're not really making any distinctions, so they come up with this more convoluted method on how to see it, like he says, that the others don't necessarily see that way. Like that, it says different than others, but that doesn't necessarily, it's just not clear here if that means all others or just the previous two that were presented, like that. Okay. Okay. Now we get into a whole thing of the different views of reflectionism. So this is how pratyaksha works, as they call it, reflectionism. So now there's going to be two schools of thought on reflectionism within that. Vijnana Bhikshu and Vachaspati Misra now. So then for basically... Okay, so basically for the next page, next two pages, they're going to dukes it out, and then we'll see if one of them comes out on top. So that we'll see on... Today is Friday, on Monday then.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki Janita Gaura Premanandi.